Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to be talking about a frightening case of medical kidnapping. In addition, we're going to explore the charges that there has been child sexual abuse and child trafficking. My guest, talking to us now from Switzerland, is Neil David Sutz, S-U-T-Z. He is a best-selling author and an activist. He is also a person who has studied the mental health field and worked in it. He is a film producer. And in 2014, Neil's lawsuit against Dr. Phil for discrimination and violation of the Disabilities Act reached national attention. Neil has a fascinating and a rather unique story that deals with the medical kidnapping of his two special needs sons in Switzerland and a pedophile network connected with high-ranking members of the Mormon Church and the state of Arizona. Neil is the author of a recent book dealing with child medical kidnapping. It's called SOS. Scream of Silence, the unfathomable story of a father trying to save his sons. And he is currently residing, as I mentioned, in Switzerland, where he has dual citizenships and a website, sosbook.is, and articles about his case are very important. And we have spent some time, as we do with every one of our guests, researching all the science, the articles, the independent corroboration, so at least we have an opportunity to present someone who is not coming with some ulterior motive or hidden agenda. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Gary.
There are probably several places to begin this conversation, but the story mostly begins with you marrying into a family of a very, well, according to you, a sordid background, and with a long history of child sexual abuse, yet a very powerful family that is connected well enough to have protection and immunity, according to you, from the law and from criminal activities. And there are two prominent Arizona families that are central to your story and what those families have done and what role they've played. Now, we have done many programs on the issue of pedophilia. We were the first to do several stories on the Franklin scandal, where Boys Town was used as a recruiting place for some very powerful politicians and religious leaders out where the Boys Town is located. And also it went clear to Washington, D.C., where there was another pedophile ring representing this particular ring, high-ranking Republicans. We also did a very comprehensive report, a whole hour, on the Scotland Yard detective who took on a case that no one else wanted. And every time he had leads, higher-ups told him to back off of it. And ultimately, after years of work on it, he went public with it. And then others came forward. A newspaper editor at the Times of London came forward with his own independent story on a similar topic, in effect corroborating the Scotland Yard detectives that there were very powerful people, including clear up and alleged the Prime Minister, Edward Heath, and members of the House of Lords, members of Parliament, throughout the entire British aristocracy, there were people who were there to defend the pedophiles and prevent truth from coming out. And of course, even on the BBC, one of its most popular personalities for over 40 years was found to be a pedophile. Now in the United States, we have Jeffrey Epstein. Now we have Jeffrey Epstein in a different perspective. How in the world did he re-enter high society, take a flight with Bill Gates, have people wanting to do business with him after he had been arrested for pedophilia and child trafficking down in West Palm Beach, Florida, and served time for that. And then he comes right out, and it's like nobody seems to care that he had this very sordid, predatory nature, and he continued to do exactly what he had done before. Then how did he amass his massive fortune? How did he get that one of the most expensive townhouses in the world? How did he get it as a gift? Someone gave him a $57 million townhouse as a gift, and he only had one client. How did he do all this? And yet the media seems completely dismissive on wanting to investigate and see the people that were on his Lolita Express. So we are not unfamiliar with this type of story, but yours we're completely unfamiliar with. So I'm going to ask you, please, to take a step by step through the beginning of your story, your marriage, what you didn't know about your family you were marrying into, and most importantly, the evidence that you have to present to this audience as you make a claim, so that the audience can see that you're being held accountable for backing up any of the statements you make. That said, the forum is yours. Take your time.
Thank you very much. The background is I'm 48 years old now. I have two sons, Skyler and Corey. They were medically kidnapped in Geneva 2 years, 1 month, and 9 days ago when we came here to start a new life. And in the court certified, testified words of my ex-wife, who has since returned to her family in Arizona, to get away from her family and the massive decades and decades of sexual and ritualistic abuse so that we could protect our kids from that ever happening to them. They're 9 and 5 now, my sons. So when I was 32, I fell into the mental health field. I had been involved in what my psychiatrist and my therapist taught me about through a lot of talk therapy, was in a very abusive relationship where I was being emotionally, mentally abused and didn't really realize what was going on because I was so in love. Started having mood swings, eventually hit rock bottom, wasn't feeling very well. Saw a psychiatrist who was also a psychologist and got a diagnosis of bipolar 2 disorder, which was kind of late, obviously getting such a diagnosis at 32 years old, having never had any psychiatric issues or visits or definitely never hospitalizations. And to this day, I never have had any hospitalizations. Being that I was a writer for a long time before that, I knew that writing was a very therapeutic tool to use in therapy of any kind, any stress in life. So I started writing, and I wrote more, and I wrote more. And what I was writing at the time as I was going through my own recovery ended up getting published. Very quickly became a bestseller in the Southwest, United States, Arizona, where I was living, California, New Mexico. Spawned me to shoot a documentary film on the state of mental health in America and also on my own recovery, coining the phrase and letting people know that there is hope, that whatever path they take, that they have to realize that we're all human beings, things happen to us, and that total and complete recovery is possible. I made a feature film that I was asked to make about my own recovery. Ended up, during the shooting of the documentary film, wanting to talk with Dr. Phil McGraw. He was a few years into his own show at that time, having gone off on his own from his time with Oprah Winfrey. Long story short, go to shoot a film in Los Angeles. We just want to be audience members. We don't want to shoot in his studio the film. We just want to talk to him, ask him questions. Long story short, I'm refused entrance based on the diagnosis of bipolar disorder, which I found rather ironic. I sued non-monetarily Dr. Phil, Paramount Pictures, et al., under the Americans with Disabilities Act to get them to change policies. And the nice thing is that the American media took to the story very quickly. I was on everywhere from Howard Stern to the Diane Sawyer to Fox, and everybody was very responsive because I wasn't out just saying, hey, I want a bunch of money. I'm saying, hey, I need you to change your policies. So now it's nice at the end of the Dr. Phil show, even because we prevailed in federal court very quickly and with the media, especially with the media, there's a big statement at the end of the show saying the show is essentially for entertainment purposes only. So I'm on top of my career. We're coming up now in 2010. So this is going back from 2002 and 2003 to 2010. I'm meeting a lot of people. I get introduced to a woman, Helen Creamer Bradford, and her daughter, Courtney Creamer. Courtney at the time had a five-week-old baby. That is my son, Corey, my legal stepson. And they seemed like a nice mother and daughter. They were very interested in talking about mental health. They had some connections and work they'd done with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Long story short, one thing led to another. Courtney and I fell in love. We got married very quickly. One of the contingencies of marrying her, I found out she was Mormon. I grew up in Arizona as far as America goes. I was born in New York and then grew up in Arizona, so there's Mormons everywhere. You don't really think about it. They were just typical mainstream LDS. My ex-brother-in-law, Courtney's brother, her oldest brother, is Damian Parnell Creamer, who's the CEO and founder of Primavera Online High School in Strongmine. Primavera is the largest online high school in Arizona and one of the largest in America. They all seem like a really nice family, very successful, very out in society, hooked up with politicians that were friends of theirs, from Governor Ducey to Bill Montgomery, the prosecutor. It seemed like a beautiful situation on the surface. And long story short, very soon into our marriage, which happened 4 months after we met, pretty soon into us being married, I had to join the Mormon Church, as I said, to be allowed to marry her, which I did as a kind of just a formality without knowing anything about whatever their belief system was. I learned later what it was and is. I learned that there had been decades and decades and decades of horrific sexual and ritualistic and psychological and emotional abuse in their family at the hands of my ex-wife's biological father, who has then passed away. That's Don Creamer, and her oldest brother, Damian. And it had been kept from everybody, meaning kept from the community. Nobody had any idea what was going on in this family. And it wasn't just my ex-wife telling me this. It was her sisters, some of her other brothers, saying it's the big secret. We can't ever tell anybody because we're all taken care of. We either work for Damian and his companies now, or we've worked for him, or he bought us our houses or whatever. Long story short, I say to my ex-wife, look, I know Corey, your biological son, is not my biological son, but I'm his father now, and there's no other father in the picture. So I think what we need to do is we need to go to the authorities in Arizona. We need to tell them what's going on with your brother and what happened and how your mother was implicated in it. And that was the beginning of my losing everything. So within 3 months of my marrying her in 2010, I went from being a best-selling author. My film was in 5 states. It was on its way to 28 states. I just picked up a national contract on my film distribution for my feature film, Human Like You. I was going around the country giving talks. My book had received testimonials from some of the most world-renowned psychiatrists and psychologists. Everything was kind of perfect. And then, as I like to say, then I met the Mormons, or then I met the Creamers. And I will say, because the story is very, as I say, unfathomable, as the title of the book SOS states, it's an unfathomable story. Everything I say, every allusion I make to anything, any name that I mention, I have court-certified, government-certified documents and or audio and video proof of everything I'm saying, as unbelievable as it sounds. We're married for a few years, me and Courtney. I decided, despite my, Corey's my son, blood or not, I took him on as my son when he was 5 weeks old, and I've never thought of him differently. But being married to her legally and being tied to this family, and every time I tried going to the authorities, suddenly the police would show up at our house and harass me and say, you know, we're going to kick you out, and you're probably, we hear you're abusing your wife. And I kind of learned that they ran the East Valley of Phoenix. We lived in Mesa, Gilbert, Chandler, or Tempe. And everywhere we went, every time I tried to say something to essentially protect my son, Corey, and go public with this, not for my own benefit, but for the sake of the protection of my own little family, I started having problems. So when you lose economic status and you lose reputation and your own personal immediate family runs from you, you don't have a support system anymore, and you look invalid in the eyes of other people. So we're divorced in 2013. Skip ahead to 2017 is where this all began, which is why my children ended up getting medically kidnapped, and why in the final hours here of saving my sons, which I am doing everything conceivable and reaching out to everybody possible to get their political intervention, We skip ahead to 2017. My ex-wife, having acknowledged and been the victim of all the abuse she was subject to in her family and knowing what was happening, discovered a child pornography video of her stepfather, Robert Grant Bradford, who's the great-grandson of Heber J. Grant, the former prophet of the Mormon Church, molesting our nephew, her nephew through blood, my nephew through marriage, who was 7 or 8 years old at the time, in a bathtub in a hotel in Tucson, Arizona, while they were on Christmas break while her mother was filming the child porn video with her mobile phone. So needless to say, respectfully to the issues that my ex-wife had already in her life, she lost her grip on reality at that time, seeing this in front of her eyes with her own nephew, who she thought of as a son. We'd previously talked about at some point coming to Switzerland, because I'm an American citizen, but I'm also Swiss by birth, economically stable, you know, socially stable, we thought, safe, most importantly, easy for me to get a job, start over, excellent schools for the kids, both special needs kids. Between 2013 and 2014, even though we weren't married, we had another kid. That's my son, Skyler. So we have two kids. They're 7 and 3. We just discovered a child pornography video of her father-in-law, or her stepfather, my father-in-law, molesting our nephew. Her mother's making the porn video. We've already lost everything. She loses her grip on reality, and we turn it into the authorities, and then they took the last of what we had away from us. We even lost our apartment, our little apartment we had at the time. So we quickly came to Switzerland on June 28th of 2017. And within 2.5 weeks, on the night of July 15th into July 16th of 2017, we're in our apartment in downtown Geneva, Switzerland, and she attempts a double suicide out of the 8th-story window of our apartment with our youngest son, Skyler, who was 3 at the time. She's immediately brought, when I'm able to get to a mobile phone, because I couldn't leave her alone in the room. The phone was in the other room. When I'm able to get a phone, she's brought to a hospital, the HUG, which is called the, in English, it's the Geneva University Hospital. It's the government hospital here that everybody goes to. She's brought there, a study, an analysis is done of her state, and she's court-ordered by a court called the TPAE, the Tribunal, the Court for the Protection of Adults and Children. She's court-ordered to 60 days of psychiatric treatment in a psych hospital here called Belly Day. It's a beautiful idea. It's the Cantonal Psychiatric Hospital. Unbeknownst to me, things start moving very rapidly. This is July 16th, 2017. On July 16th, 2017, she apparently starts making reports to the people at the psychiatric hospital here that, in fact, I am a pedophile, that I have raped her, beaten her, molested the kids, and beaten the kids throughout the entire course of our marriage, and that the kids are not safe with me, and that the CPS here, Child Protective Services, which is called the SPMI in Geneva, it's the Service for the Protection of Minors and Infants, she said to them, you need to go get my kids now. So Switzerland, despite what people think, it is not chocolate, cheese, and Rolexes and banks, just alone. It's much, much, much more dirty than that. And there are many, many secrets here. It took the single word in one sentence of a woman who had just tried to commit a double suicide, making false defamatory claims, which were proven false within 4 weeks by numerous witnesses, testimonials, and my ex-wife's own admission by retracting everything she said, saying, I only said that because I thought Neil hospitalized me. So then the snowball started. Within a couple of weeks, and this is where this gets on the really, really, how can I put this, the really sick, twisted, high-up level of this situation. Remember, we came here to Switzerland, Gary, to escape her family. And this is what she said to the court. This is what she said to the hospitals here. This is what she said to everybody. Suddenly, we have the U.S. consul to Switzerland, Jeremiah Sturck, and his senior consular assistant, Chris Delmonico, who at the time were the most two powerful Americans in Switzerland. Now Ambassador McMullen, who took his position in December of 2017, we have an American ambassador. They were in charge of what was going on here. And the you mentioned, you know, before, as you know, the denunciation, the criminal denunciation that was made last Tuesday in Bern, Switzerland, to the Attorney General of Switzerland. Can I give you a little background on kind of how that all ties together?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. So basically, these guys get involved. The first month, between July 25th of 2017 and the end of August, I don't have a lawyer. I can't get a lawyer. My kids were literally ripped out of my arms when I thought we were at the hospital for a physical exam for the kids. They were ripped out of my arms. I was shown no paperwork. I was just told, we're keeping your kids. We're not telling you why. And they hold up a piece of paper across the room and say, we have a piece of paper that says we can do this. Get out of here now. And they open the door. Two big security guards grab me and they throw me out of the hospital. And the last thing the security guards say to me is, good luck, get a lawyer. I don't see my kids for a month. Jeremiah Sturck and Chris Delmonico apparently at this time, and this took me 8 more months to even find out they had been involved, start working with my ex-wife, who's locked up in a psychiatric hospital, but still brought on a regular basis to the kids' hospital where my kids were kept for 4 months in the children's hospital in Geneva as part of a proven psychiatric experiment by the world-renowned Daniel Scott Schechter, MD. He has an address at One Park Avenue. He's here in Geneva. He's won more psychiatric awards for his psychiatric experiments on PTSD mothers and children than any psychiatrist on the planet. He gets involved. My ex-family-in-law, the Creamers, the Bradfords get involved. Damien Creamer and Robert Bradford end up sending false international missing persons reports from Phoenix to Washington, D.C. to Bern. And they start the process of Jeremiah Sturck and Chris Delmonico. They are representatives of a foreign state. They're diplomats. They're not allowed to get involved in any Swiss matters. That is the federal law here. It's Article 271 CP. CP stands for Code Penal, which is the criminal code. It says very clearly, if any foreign officials from any other country as much as make more than a phone call that gets refused and pushed to get involved to get any information regarding any Swiss matter that can be handled by the Swiss authorities, this time we're already, there's a court thing going on, there's the SPMI, which is CPS, and the kids are being kept in a hospital. If they do that, they are subject to immediately having their diplomatic immunity revoked by Switzerland and being put in Swiss federal prison for between 3 and 20 years. Now, I didn't learn this until February of this year from the director of the FBI of Switzerland, who actually told me this because he knew these guys. And he told me, he said, there's no way. He goes, Americans come here. The first thing we're caught is never get involved because it's Article 271. And it's almost worse than killing somebody here for a diplomat because they did it, they got involved, and then they did things like getting involved in changing my youngest son, Skyler's last name. His last name legally is Creamer, which is the name of my ex-wife, hyphen Suits, which is my last name. And they took off the name Suits. They made amazingly strategic plans very quickly before I had an opportunity to get a lawyer to what they call repatriate my kids back to America, which means commit international child kidnapping. I had to write a book with the documentation because in the end, Gary, and this is a subject you're very familiar with, the world of psychiatry, the world of diagnoses, false diagnoses, etc. In the end of this nightmare, and the reason that I have put the book out, I'm pushing this in the media, is because President Trump, Secretary of State Pompeo, and the U.S. Ambassador to Switzerland, Ed McMullen, have no idea this is going on. It has been intentionally kept from them, even though I published a book and bought a full page in the Washington Times on May 9th. It was kept, his copy of the Times was kept from him that day. And the reason I'm doing this is because people have said to me in the end, there was this thing done called a psychiatric family expertise. Okay, big fancy words for a couple of very questionable psychiatrists here in Geneva, who one of them is under investigation for her questionable studies on families, which removed children based on false diagnoses of parents, on lies. Based on their words, they say in the end of this, even though Mr. Suits has seen 3 different psychiatrists over 225 times in the last, at this time, it was just under 2 years at that point, and even though he's seen them, and all 3 testify to the fact that Mr. Suits has no psychoses, he has no hallucinations, he's not in a state of delirium, he's not paranoid, he's completely stable, he just has an enormous amount of anxiety because his kids are in a living hell where they've been neglected, abused physically, sexually, emotionally, medically. It's a the website, the articles in Medical Kidnap very clearly show physically what's happened to my boys, and it's a nightmare. They say in the end, these experts told the court, well, we studied the family. We studied Mr. Suits. We studied the kids. They've seen me with my kids in one 45 minutes with Corey and me and Corey and one with me and Skyler for 45 minutes, and they saw me three or four other times. Despite the truth from my psychiatrist, despite the fact that I've never been hospitalized, despite the fact that I wrote a best-selling book on mental health recovery and went on national TV in America talking about mental health rights and worked as an activist, despite the fact that I have level one fingerprint clearance from the Department of Public Safety in Arizona so that I am allowed to take care of vulnerable people, vulnerable children, handicapped people, and it was processed through the FBI to make sure I was actually clear. That's what the level one fingerprint clearance is. Despite all of that, they say Mr. Suits has actually imagined all of this. There was no collusion with the embassy. They were never involved, or it was just, you know, they made some phone calls to find out. His son Skyler's name was never changed. The Mormon church was never involved. We have everybody documented up to Lance Wickman, who's the general counsel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who got personally involved in this. There's a re-poll right now, which means the Swiss border is physically sealed if somebody tries to cross the border with my kids, because Greg and Amy Richards, who are high up in the Mormon church, they were the leaders in Geneva, but they're high up in America as well. They tried to kidnap my kids on Christmas Day of 2017. I found out, and then they sealed the Swiss border. The court that's keeping my kids sealed the Swiss border because of a kidnapping attempt by leaders of the Mormon church, and they add that onto the delusional paranoia that they're putting against me defamatorily of he made this all up. So they're saying, yeah, Mr. Suits is great. He earns a good living. He's a good guy. But he's really psychologically dangerous for his children because he believes this is a massive international conspiracy. The court file is 6,500 pages big. The book is 250 pages. 40 or 50 pages of the book is proof, and that's about 5% of the documented proof. And it is what it comes down to, Gary, is other than Ambassador McMullen, who, again, does not know anything about this and was not in office when Jeremiah Sturck and Chris Delmonico did this from the U.S. Embassy in Bern, you have so many people involved. There's over 87 parties known involved in this case. And this goes from the bottom of my ex-wife's family, being her next oldest sister, all the way up to the top of the Mormon church, Lance Wickman, the general counsel, all the way to the Department of State officials, who are the U.S. consul and his assistant, all saying we have to rush still and get the kids back to America, or we have to make sure that Mr. Suits never gets the kids. This is the clincher, okay? Jeremiah Sturck and Chris Delmonico didn't just break Article 271 of the Swiss Criminal Code and continue to try to do it after they've supposedly been quote-unquote out of the situation. In June of 2018, which was a year after this started, they had supposedly been out of the situation. My kids were 4 months in a hospital. They were 5 months in a group home. They've now been in another group home, which is in the village where I'm actually making this interview from right now, which is Gentaux, which is outside of Geneva. They've been physically abused, psychologically abused, emotionally abused. They've been molested. They've been beaten. They've slept in their own urine, blood, feces, and vomit. And it's the most horrific, horrific situation. And they're saying Mr. Suits made everything up.
Okay, let's go through this piece by piece, since now we've had a chance to lay out your story. First, let's go in reverse. Who exactly are you accusing of sexually abusing your children at this time?
Oh, at this time, it's very clear. What's happening in a foyer here means it translates to group home. They are living in a children's group home. I can give an example tonight. Ambulances are there tonight because one of the girls in the place lost it and started trying to burn down the whole place after she'd been removed the other night for trying to assault one of the people that works there with a giant knife. My kids are, you have to remember, my kids are special needs, okay? My youngest son, Skyler, they're bilingual now, but my youngest son, Skyler, has the brain effects of my ex-wife having taken Adderall, Valium, and alcohol during pregnancy and breastfeeding, so he's severely handicapped. My oldest son, Corey, has infantile autism, so he's 9, but he functions emotionally at the level of a 3-year-old. So what's happening at the foyer is that there are some really rough kids there that are in the system. and the kids aren't supervised. My kids have no, especially Skyler, he's five, but he's the size of a three-year-old because of his handicap, because of the drugs my ex-wife took. They have no ability verbally or physically to defend themselves. They're the only special needs kids in the entire foyer. They're the only half-American kids, so their first language is American, so they have strong accents when they speak French. Corey speaks like he can enunciate words. Skyler doesn't. And so they're targets for the other kids. I found the oldest boy in the foyer. I found his underwear, and he lives on the other level in another area of the foyer building. It has a different bathroom. I found his dirty underwear in my kids' laundry basket because I do their laundry every week. I buy their clothes. I do everything for them that I'm legally allowed to. And I confronted the people about this, and they said, no, that doesn't happen here. It must just be a mistake. And so who I'm accusing of actually molesting the kid, sexually molesting the kids, there's two boys at the foyer that are unquestionably molesting the boys because their clothes, their underwear has been found dirty in my son's laundry basket in their room in 150 feet from these boys, even floor in the foyer. And the group home system is, I mean, it's no different than in America in this regard. The vulnerable children are targeted. And my children are the most vulnerable. So they're being sexually molested in that sense.
All right, Neil, anyone in this audience who has had experiences with child protective custody assumes, and understandably so, that if someone is interceding to take children out of an environment, it's because one or both parents are abusing the child and therefore represent an imminent risk of harming or even killing the children. Where we don't do our homework in the United States, then following that child through the system. But we have, and we have seen that these children have been used in experiments with vaccines. They have been given electroconvulsive therapy in another one here in New York State. They have had medications tested on them. It's a childhood gulag system. It's utterly corrupt and completely anti-protective children. Now, we have to have a place for children who have been abused or threatened or neglected to be, but it shouldn't be the existing system. It's a wrongful system on all levels. Okay, we understand that. Now, you mentioned that while your wife was pregnant, she was taking medications and drinking. Why, if you were there at the time, and from your timeline, it sounds like you were, why did you allow that?
Well, and this is a question, this is also one of the accusations made against me that they're still holding over me. They're saying that although the doctors here say, contrary to Skyler's doctors in America, who followed him his whole life in America, they're saying that although Skyler is severely, he has global development delay, that's what they say. Although he has global development delay, and they say it's caused by Mr. Suits emotionally neglecting the needs of Skyler from the time he was born, and exposing him to the difficult psychiatric and emotional state of his mother, they're also saying that I should have protected my son. You're absolutely right, Gary, and this is one of the issues that I'm so glad you brought up, because this is something I want to discuss. We come from, and we live primarily in Gilbert, Arizona, Mesa, Chandler, Tempe. Going back to the beginning of the story, everybody from Governor Ducey to Bill Montgomery to the police forces and the people who run this place have taken election campaign money from either Damian Creamer, Robert Bradford, the Mormon Church, or members of their family. And this is proven. Craig Harris even proved the legislation for the charter school system that Damian profits from was primarily written in conjunction with Governor Ducey, and Damian Creamer and his family are the largest contributors. To answer your question very simply, every time I said, Courtney, and we have police records to prove this, I called the police to try to protect Skyler to say, look, she's breastfeeding Skyler. She takes Adderall. Everybody in America knows Adderall is an amphetamine salt and can cause problems in breastfeeding. Every time I made an effort to do it, and it's documented on Gilbert police records, which my lawyer, Francois Rod, who's a criminal lawyer here in Geneva, because I recently fired my family law lawyer and got a real lawyer, meaning I got a criminal law lawyer. It's documented that every time I said something, that I was going to get her into treatment to get her better, to stop her breastfeeding, let alone during the pregnancy when I tried to stop. Every single time, her parents, her stepfather Robert Graham Bradford, her mother Helen Creamer Bradford, or her brother Damian Parnell Creamer, all got the cops involved. And they ended up coming to our house and saying, he's abusing her. So it's not
okay.
a...
All right, you've made that point. Now let's go further back. Why would you get involved with a woman that you're claiming had serious mental issues? Why not just become involved and marry a positive, happy, healthy person, and based upon being around them long enough and doing some homework and due diligence on their family?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a very simple question, because that question has also been asked. That question, it's funny, Gary, that question was last asked to me by the attorney that was appointed by the same court that's illegally detaining my kids against the Convention on Child Rights and numerous other laws, against all the proof. He said, after he met me, he said to me, we're talking in French. And sorry, there's a plane. This is Gentoo, Switzerland. It's this little village outside of Switzerland that's a nightmare village, but it's right over the, it's right under the plane tracks of the Geneva airport. He says, we've been sitting here talking for the last couple of hours. He goes, why would a man like you, who obviously has it completely together, ever choose a woman like that or stay with her? And why didn't you divorce her and take the kids? And I tried to explain to him the law of in loco parentis with Corey, how every time I tried to get the parental rights in place of parent, which is in loco parentis in Arizona, I got attacked by the Creamer family, the Bradford family, and they stopped all the court processes. But basically, Gary, to answer your question, it's very simple. I met her on February 20th of 2010. I met her and I met my stepson, Corey, who was 5 weeks old at the time. And people can believe whatever they want to believe about the concept of from the mouth of babes or sixth sense or something like that. Corey was 5 weeks old. He couldn't speak at the time. He's a five-week-old baby. He's in a little baby carrier. She's carrying him. The first thing this little baby does is reach up his hand to me. Out of his little tiny hand and his little tiny arm and his little tiny body, he reaches up to grab my hand standing next to him. And I didn't hear it audibly, but I got this sense back then that he was saying to me, save me. So what happened was,
okay,
Courtney and I spent every day together for 4 months. Then we got married. When I learned what was happening in her family, Gary, in short, the only reason I ever stayed with her was to protect Corey. And then Skyler came a few years later, and it was to protect Skyler. And every time I made a move to get the kids and get away legally and not commit some horrific crime by kidnapping my own children and my own son and stepson, every time I did it, I was shut down. So I stayed and protected the kids as well as I could until we were forced to get married.
Okay. We're not here to judge you. We're here to simply try to understand how you could get yourself into such a bottomless pit of bad decisions. And a child grabbing your hand as a baby 5 weeks old, that doesn't vibrate high in a resonating scale of good reason and common sense, but it's your choice. You did what you did. Now, when did you find out that there was problems in the extended family, your in-laws? What was the first evidence that came to hand that was documented and verifiable that could withstand a court of law, a cross-examination for its accuracy?
There were two things that came up. When I met my ex-wife, Courtney, when I met her father-in-law, Robert Bradford, he's a man of a certain age, he's an older gentleman, appearing to be very intellectual, very kind of know-it-all. One of the sisters said to me, oh, hey, because they call him Brad. They call Robert Brad in the family. They call him, that's his nickname, is Brad. They say, hey, you'd never believe that Brad was the guy that was the money man that set up the hit and bought the gun to kill Sheriff Joe and Governor Hull back in 2002. This is 3 months in. We're not married yet. We're engaged, but we're not married. This is the first bomb that gets dropped on me. Now, I had also, to be very direct with you, she's a Mormon girl, okay? Mormon girls don't have sex before they get married. I never pushed it with her. The night of our marriage, that's when I knew. And I was already in love with her, and I was already I cared deeply for my stepson, Corey, at that time. We were bonded together. We spent every day together, me, Corey, and Courtney, from the time we met, except for one day until we got married 4 months later. We were together all the time.
So we understand. You're saying she wasn't a virgin that you discovered on... Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is that she had a very, very lovely, very well put together, very humbly dressed, and I don't mean Mormon like FLDS Warren Jeffs and their funny little weird dresses these ladies wear, but she was very cultured and classy. I'd never seen her body. I never saw her physical body naked. Never saw her in a bathing suit, never saw her in short pants. The night of our marriage, when we were together and made love for the first time, I saw her body. It was covered from neck to toe in scars. And having had a little bit of background in psychiatry, because that was my career, and knowing what a cutter was and knowing where cutting came from, which is usually from people who are ritualistically abused to that degree, that's when I knew something had really horribly happened. I never broached the subject with her until a couple of months later, and I was forced to because this is 3 months in, I get the Robert Bradford bomb dropped on me, finding out that he's the guy that tried to kill Sheriff Joe and Governor Hall. That's documented in the New York Times. That's not a joke. And I didn't even believe it until I looked it up myself.
No, we read the story today of Sheriff Joe being the target of an assassination. Was that her father or stepfather?
I'm sorry?
That's her stepfather.
Her stepfather, her biological father, who was part of the abuse directly that she was the victim of, had passed away when she was 16. She's 30 at this time.
Did she claim that her stepfather sexually abused her?
No, her stepfather. She never claimed her stepfather sexually abused her. She claimed that her stepfather had sexually abused his own children, but she never claimed. And this was later. And this is what kept happening is we meet, she looks lovely, she's cultured, she's intelligent. Her mother works with NAMI, not as an executive, just as like a volunteer. They're in kind of the same community I am with the mental health community in Arizona. And then 3 months into knowing her, I find out that her stepfather was accused of molesting his own kids and was the guy that tried to kill Sheriff Joe and Governor Hull and skated on unsworn falsification and got probation. The night we get married, I see her naked for the first time and see she's a cutter. And then 2 months after that, into the marriage, we're solid living together. Then I find out that I met one of her other personalities. I discovered at that point she had dissociative identity disorder, which I understand used to be called multiple personality disorder. And we were 6 months in at that time. We were already 2 months married at that time. We were living together. Corey was under my wing. And then her other personality told me about one of the personalities of a 3-year-old told me about what her brother and her father had done.
Okay, hold on a moment. That's a red flag because someone who makes a statement in that type of emotional state could be disconnected from reality, and false memory syndrome is rampant in the United States, especially down in the 1980s when the family out in California was accused of sexually molesting all the children, it turns out, at one point in their day school, and the longest trial in California history up to that point, I think it was 7 years, the most costly. And at the end of it, after all these accusations, and I mean some of them were demonic, and they'd be flown to the desert, and there'd be devil worship and sacrifice of animals, all of it was shown to be false. All of it. They were completely innocent of all charges, but their names were the McMartin, Bucky McMartin and his family. Their lives were ruined. One of my close friends, one day claimed out of the clear blue that her father had allowed their family doctor, when she was 3, to be sexually abused, and she went after him. She humiliated him, and she would do terrible things to him. She was a professor. She tried to get him fired. And I spoke with him, and he said, "What can I tell you? She's seeing this therapist, and this therapist is getting all of his patients to believe that they were all sexually abused, even though none of them had ever been abused, none of them ever acknowledged they were abused. But suddenly he helped them, this therapist, help them discover what was hidden in their psyche." So that was the last time and by the way, he died of a stroke from the stress. And I said, "You're not my friend anymore. I don't want anything to do with you because you caused the death of your father." And she would later try to apologize. "Well, you know, everybody was into it at the time," but no, I don't buy that. So I would not hold as quality prima facie evidence what someone in an altered state mentally is saying about what happened earlier in their life. That doesn't wash with me, Neil.
Agree. And Gary, what I want to explain to you so we're very clear, she didn't tell me as this 3-year-old personality my brother, my father, this person, that person in the church and our family, the cousins molested. She didn't tell me that she was in one of the situations. And the only thing I knew about dissociative identity disorder, multiple personality disorder, is if somebody is truly disassociated like that, you're not supposed to try to snap them out of it. So I sat and I just tried to be quiet and gentle and listen and observe what was happening. Then she went to sleep that night and she woke up the next morning. And she hadn't disassociated for a couple more days. After a few days passed, when she was just herself again, I asked her, and she didn't want to talk about it. She says, yeah, I get like that sometimes. So I went to her, a couple of her sisters that I knew. There's 9 children in the family, a large Mormon family. And I said, I went to the one sister that spent the most time with us, who was there a lot, her next oldest sister, Danelle. I said, this kind of, did abuse happen in your family? Like really bad abuse against Courtney? Because she's covered in scars and she disassociated the other night. And she said, that's kind of the big secret in our family. And she showed me parts of her body and told me what happened to her. This is a girl who was talking to me completely in, if you will, in reality, in the present moment. She wasn't on drugs. She wasn't disassociated. To confirm that when Courtney, my ex-wife, was telling me, she wasn't telling me, she didn't say in a disassociated state that night, Neil, my brother, my father molested me. She was in one of the situations calling out, Daddy, Daddy, don't do it. Don't hurt me. Don't hurt my... She was going through the... whatever it was that caused her to disassociate.
Okay, let's pull back. Clearly, there is something amiss here in her. But also, I find that there's something out of balance in you wanting to stay with someone as either a martyr to helping her, because this is a situation where if you're not competent and qualified to help someone with severe mental problems, that person should be in the care of a more humanistic psychologist, psychiatrist, not drugged, not given lobotomies or electroconvulsive therapy. But the last thing you want is to double down and try to have more children in a situation with a family that itself has been accused, whether confirmed or not, and your wife is prone to making exaggerated claims, and later those exaggerated claims caused you to end up losing the children that you cared for together. And yet you were sticking together, and you with this same woman fled the country, and now she is the person that's caused the children to be into this terrible situation. At what point do you get to understand maybe this is the wrong person to be with? It's on you at this point.
Oh,
Neil.
No, I mean,
not the ambassador or anybody else.
Beginning,
huh?
I agree with you. I stayed with her when I knew that this kind of stuff had really happened, and it sunk in, and enough people in the family, as well as her own counselor, her own certified counselor who I met. She wasn't seeing a psychiatrist at the time. She was seeing a counselor, a therapist who knew her for years since she was a teenager. And I talked to this woman, Kathy, and I said, Kathy, did this really, really, really happen in Courtney's family? And she's a certified counselor with the state of Arizona. She said, yeah, it really happened. And that's why I work with Courtney and just talk with her and give her...
But you don't know that, first of all, a therapist cannot tell anyone, including a family member, unless they have a specific permission. There are laws about that, of the case history of someone who they're married to. Also, how would that woman know unless there had been an independent investigation adjudicated in a court of law where someone was actually found guilty of something? We can call Jeffrey Epstein legitimately a pedophile, demonic, a real terrible person. But think of all the people who have not yet been called a pedophile, who've been, it is claimed that they are, but we don't have the hard prima facie evidence. So again, at some point, you have to take a look and see what you're up against. If you're up against a family that has political control in a given area, even in New York City for decades, the mafia could control a neighborhood. You know, John Gotti did, Joe Colombo did, Bonomo did, all of the families controlled areas. Well, the last thing you do is go in there and start saying, I'm going to take you on. You'll lose. Then on top of that, the very person you're trying to protect also is now putting a knife right through your heart. You don't embrace that person closer because that heart's only going to go further into you and they're not going to change their way. So when the whole system is corrupt against you, including the Swiss system, the American system, then you ought to recalculate how you want to tell the story, but pull yourself away from it completely. If I were you, I would completely just get away from all this, all of it, because you making yourself a martyr, unless you have a need to be a martyr, and if you do, then you're going to win. Because these people, if they're what you say, if they have that kind of control, then I want to introduce you to the memory of a friend of mine, Gary Webb, who I knew very well. He took on the establishment. Initially, he won, and then he lost, and then allegedly put two bullets into his brain. If you want to get justice, then you should start a movement with family members who have also had children kidnapped, who've been in relationships where there have been abuse and they have been challenged incorrectly, wrongly. Work together to create a coalition. Work together with other people. Bring that story in a documentary. Because when you start showing up outside someone's house with a group of people challenging them, when you show up outside the Mormon church challenging them, when you show up outside of their business challenge them, when you go to the news media and say, why aren't you doing your homework on these allegations we're making? Because when you do that, it's like turning the light on in the middle of the morning in a kitchen and you see the cockroaches you didn't know you had scrambling. Because as long as you're fighting the way you look like you're fighting them, they're going to win. And you'll just be another person amongst countless who thought that right, justice, truth would prevail. It never does. If it did, Julian Assange wouldn't be in prison and dying. Snowden wouldn't be hiding out in Russia for the rest of his life. Chelsea Manning wouldn't be in prison right now because she refused to drop a dime on him. We wouldn't have had all the crimes against humanity and the people exposing him punished. This is the country we live in. This is the world we live in. Every single country is guilty of this type of malfeasance. If you've got the truth on your side, then the last person that's going to help you is anyone in authority. What you can trust are other victims. What you can do is create and formulate processes. Otherwise, all you're going to have is a story that is so gut-wrenching, so it is so perverse in the concept that it's like watching a train wreck. You've got to go from being the victim in this story to being smarter than the people that you're fighting, because you never play in someone else's game by their rules. You'll always lose. But do what they can't do. Maneuvers they can't maneuver. Create a whole story. The person with Franklin, the Franklin scandal did that. The guy from Scotland Yard did that. The guy from the Times of London did that. They exposed this and got public hearings on it because they had a lot of other people who were victims. Hundreds came forward who were victims of child trafficking, and the police were part of it. And that's why I kept getting killed. The police were getting payoffs. So just look at yourself as one of thousands of victims. But I would take a different approach. That's just my personal observation. Your final thoughts, please.
I agree with you 100%. It's like you were saying, you know, it's a big story and you wanted me to kind of go through it. I'll hit the points just briefly. Why did I stay when I knew? And then I learned worse about the family and worse about the family. I stayed for my son, Corey, my stepson, who is my son. I stayed for him to protect him because there was no way of him ever being protected.
And how did that work out? I understand what you did. You don't have to repeat it. We're out of time. What I'm saying is there's a point to where you have to re-strategize and create a different approach to solving the problem, because the approach you're taking now isn't working, and it's not going to continue to work, and all you're going to do is look like a victim, which you are, but you're not going to change the outcome for your child, your stepchild, and your maternal child. You're not going to change that unless you change your strategy.
Finally did on May 9th of this year when I published the book, because everything had to be exposed. And then on the 5th of August, my ex-wife's family, her brother in particular, and her parents, and all of their corporations were put into a defamation suit. We've fortunately been able to get medical kidnapping.
Neil, we're running out of time now. We only got nine seconds left. We will continue this on an upcoming program, and I wish you well. And hopefully there'll be a proper outcome, and the people who deserve to have this in the public record will, and those who need to be exonerated will as well. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I'm Gary Knoll. My guest, Neil David Suits in Switzerland. Terrible case. One can only imagine the pain and suffering he's gone through. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love in here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh,